Hey, everybody, this is Andy Marquette, and I am joined by my colleague and friend, Lise McTague, and we are, Les Geek Out, geekly bi-weekly, where we talk about representation in media, mostly queer, because that's how we roll, and feminist. Hi, Lise, how are you doing this week?
Because that's also how we roll.
That is so true. We are just rolling. How's it going?
It's been a shit week, but I'm glad to be talking to you about cool stuff, so.
Damn, it was a totally shit week. So this is so much fun that we get to talk about cool shit that is not shitty. It's exactly. Like cool shit in the cool sense, not the shitty sense. That's what I meant.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Okay, whatever. We hope that things are not less shitty for all of you out there in listening land. Thanks for tuning in this week. We are going to talk about the brand new 2020 documentary, Disclosure, as opposed to, and I want to make this very clear, as opposed to the 1994 film, Disclosure, starring Demi Moore and Michael Douglas. No, that is not what we're talking about, because why? Why the hell would we even do that? That is just wrong in so many ways. No, this is the documentary that was produced by Laverne Cox. And I'm going to read to you guys from the website, which is disclosurethemovie.com. Here's what Disclosure is. It is an unprecedented, eye-opening look at transgender depictions in film and television, revealing how Hollywood simultaneously reflects and manufactures our deepest anxieties about gender. And leading trans thinkers are included here, and creatives, including Laverne Cox, Lily Wachowski, Yance Ford, MJ Rodriguez, Jamie Clayton, and Chaz Bono, and they share their reactions and resistance to some of Hollywood's most beloved moments. That is the Disclosure we are going to talk about, is the documentary. It is available on Netflix. If you have Netflix, please run, don't walk, to watch this. It's like 90 minutes. No, it's like almost 2 hours, and it's fucking amazing. And I am now going to turn it over to Lise to start explaining why it is fucking amazing. Lise.
It is fucking amazing. I mean, this is a movie that stuck with me. So I watched it last night so that it would be fresh in my mind for our talk today. And I had dreams about it last night. It really gets down in there, and it touches something in you. It reminded me a little bit. It seems like it's of a genre of the movie, the documentary, The Celluloid Closet, which came out in 1995 and was based on a book that came out in the 80s. And I've seen that a few times. And that was a movie that affected me deeply when I first saw it. And Disclosure did much the same for me, even though it didn't speak to me as directly as The Celluloid Closet does. Even though I don't always necessarily think I'm on the cis end of the spectrum, I am definitely not on the trans end of the spectrum either. I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle. So a lot of the experiences that were being talked about in Disclosure, I could empathize with, but I haven't experienced many of them myself.
Same.
Yeah, which I think that's important to get out here.
I agree.
Because we're going to be talking about people's experiences that I, and I'm assuming you to a degree as well, Andy, haven't directly experienced.
Yes, this is true. So, this is true. And I think that is important. So, yes, carry on.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, Disclosure. Where do we start? One of the things I really liked about Disclosure is that it starts pretty much at the beginning of moving pictures. So they start talking about, you know, depictions of trans people in film have existed more or less as long as depictions of anybody on film have. Unfortunately, a lot of the tropes and the stereotypes and the things that we are still fighting against today, over 100 years later, you can see they show clips that really demonstrate the birth of these just really awful tropes. Some of the main ones, you know, being the old hackneyed, and which unfortunately still seems to come up occasionally, the men in dresses for laughs, right? One of the clips they showed was from a D.W. Griffith film, Judith of Bethulia, which is one of the, if not the first sort of feature-length film in which a trans person is identified.
Can we just jump in here? This was 1914, everyone. And for those of you who are not aware, D.W. Griffith is also the filmmaker of the most horrendously racist film, Birth of a Nation, which spawned a whole new Klan and all kinds of horrible shit back. I think that one came out around 1915, 1914. So
yeah,
the guy was really prolific and did a whole bunch of different films. But Judith of Bethulia was 1914. And there's like a eunuch. And from there, I will hand it back to you, Lise.
Right. Yeah. So it's this eunuch character who is being played for laughs. Mm-hmm. I mean, they make the point that, you know, this movie is important to the history of cinema because there are certain technical things that they do with storytelling in the movie. But that's not why it shows up in Disclosure. It shows up in Disclosure because this is our first view in a feature film of a trans person, and it is already being played for laughs, this appearance.
This person, can we just say the character is identified in the cast list as a eunuch. So, and there's so many meta layers we can delve into there, but the clip shows a man, a cisgender man who is dressed as a woman and sort of flouncing about with exaggerated hand motions to sort of, because this was a silent film, wasn't it? So, yeah. This character was like trying to portray him or herself as a woman, but we all know the inside joke that it's not really a woman, or is it? And he's an emasculated man because he's a eunuch. So
right, he's literally emasculated.
So many layers that we could delve into there. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from there for a very long time. It's as bad or worse. And so, you know, we see men in dresses played for laughs for forever. And, you know, as a kid, I loved Monty Python. That was one of, you know, my favorite, like, comedy troupes. And they've been playing that joke. They played that joke for decades, you know. But it all comes back. It starts back here at the beginning of cinema. And then we see something a little insidious starting to happen where, and we've seen this with, you know, queer representation as well, of not queer, gay representation, gay and lesbian, where the trans person goes from being a joke to being a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about the movies where the trans person is a murderer, a serial killer. Probably one of the most notorious of these being Silence of the Lambs, which, you know, I mean, this is another. This is a movie that I have loved. Now, I have been more aware of the problematic portions of this movie before this, you know, watching Disclosure. But yeah, I mean, and there is an attempt made to address it in the film, but it is so little and so sort of ineffectual against the overall message that this trans woman is a psychopathic killer. And I guess, you know, what is so insidious about that are you know, we have two extremes. We have the threat and we have the joke. And these are the only depictions that a lot of Americans and, you know, other people are seeing of trans people, right?
Yeah. I want, and or the trans person, I think this was it might have been a Law and Order episode, but the trans person is portrayed as the dead victim, already murdered for being trans or whatever associated with being trans is all about. So there,
I mean, swing a stick in a police procedural, and you will hit a dead transgender person.
Yeah, yes, and then there's like this whole dialogue around that is usually, you know, it's made a joke, like, you know, the detective lifting up the skirt of the trans woman, and oh, this isn't a woman at all. Well, She was pre-op. So yes, she was a woman, but she was not surgically, you know, whatever. You can still be a woman, a trans woman, and still have your junk, your male junk. Mm-hmm. So your cisgender junk, but regardless.
Well, and let's talk about that.
Let's do.
So there was a whole section where they talked about how transsexual, I'm sorry, wow. You can tell I just watched this movie. There's a whole lot of...
Well, that was what the terminology that was used mm-hmm. back in the day. And there are still some people who identify as trans who do use it for themselves. So that's why I always ask, which term do you prefer? Especially if I'm talking to older trans people who may have transitioned in the 70s or 80s. Because they think of themselves as transsexual sometimes. But I always ask, because I just don't know for sure how someone wants to be referred to, if we're discussing theory and the like.
Right.
And this movie does bring up that term.
Mm-hmm. It does. And yes, I've been hearing a lot of it.
So. Yeah. So you'll hear that term a lot. You'll hear transgender. You'll hear sometimes drag queen, because this is a conversation I've had a lot of times with my friends, is that thank God we have more language now. To explain ourselves or to identify as who we really are. So transgender is, I think, a great term, but for the most part, you're dealing with people who are, you know, they identify as male or female, some as non-binary. There are trans people who identify as non-binary and use they, them pronouns. That's why it's just always important to say hi and introduce yourself with your pronouns so that they know it's okay for them to express their pronouns, and to, you know, just say, I'm sorry, do you prefer the term transgender or transsexual as we discuss issues pertaining to that? I mean, if you are going to have an academic conversation with a trans person about gender and sexuality and sexual orientation and sex, then it's always good to clear the air first before you begin that. This is what I have been told and taught, and it's respectful and it's polite. But yes, I too was like, wow, transsexual, that's a term I have not heard in a while when I was watching this movie.
I know, I'm a little embarrassed that it just like tripped out of my mouth.
But you were dreaming about the film, Lee, so it's clearly embedded.
I was dreaming about the film
in your subconscious. So but the reason you use that term was because of the interviews from the 70s and 80s. There you go.
Right. And more recently, there's a whole section of the film that deals with depictions of transgender people in, I guess, you know, talk shows, right?
Yes.
These like news shows, these talk shows, like think from Oprah to Jerry Springer to Arsenio Hall to kind of everything in between. And it seemed like there was a certain point where everyone had to have usually a trans woman on, sometimes a trans man. And, oh my God, I do not think I have heard that many people that interested about what's going on between someone's legs ever as I have in these so-called interviews, which really seem to be not a whole lot more than a way for the interviewer to satisfy some just really inappropriate wonderings about another person.
It's lurid.
And that really also
points to, I think Laverne Cox may have been discussing this. And can I just give a shout out here to Laverne Cox, who was the executive producer and also kind of the guide and the narrator, one of the point people throughout this documentary, and who provided so a lot of really good context for those of us who are ignorant, myself included, and the other actors and who are all trans that were brought on to give their perspectives and their insight and context and knowledge, and a historian. I mean, it was so fabulous to have all of these people as guides through the history of trans representation in media. And they would show these clips, as you're talking about, from these talk shows, and it was fucking cringeworthy. You know, I'm having not really watched talk shows like that, so I hardly ever did and I still don't. But to see Arsenio Hall asking these kinds of really gross questions and then like about tucking your penis mm-hmm. to like appear more quote unquote feminine, whatever the fuck that means. And then talking about, I don't think I'd be able to do that because, you know, I'm big, or, oh my God, it was just awful. And then seeing Laverne Cox's face and she's like, wow, you know, but the questions were always about genitalia.
Right. There were no questions about, well, I mean, and maybe there were, we were just seeing, you know, mm-hmm. a small mm-hmm. clip of these, mm-hmm. but you know, there wasn't a whole lot that we saw of like, what's your life like now? How are things different for you before and after? I mean, I think that would have been much more interesting to hear about,
yeah.
you know, how their quality of life has changed and not whether or not they are pre-op or post-op.
Yeah. And whether or not they plan to be one of those two. It's,
mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, for me, and that's got to be one of the most demeaning questions to be asked. But as you know, I'm also a queer person, and but I'm cisgender, so oftentimes I do get mistaken as a guy. But no one ever like asked me questions about my junk.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is a privilege that cisgender people have. Is that for yes. the most part, people don't ask us questions about our junk. Like, what do you do with it? Like, where is it? Meaning the penis, right? I mean, it's because it's usually about the penis. It's always about the goddamn penis for a lot of these people.
Well, I mean, of course it is. Most cisgender men can't fathom what it would be like to live without one. So,
yeah.
So much of their identity is wrapped up in it. So, of course, they're like, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. This is all I can think about. I mean, what? Fuck you. You know, the least important, the least interesting thing about any of us is what is between our legs. I am far more interested in what is in someone's head and what is in someone's heart than I am with what is in their underwear.
Same. And I'm sure trans dudes get asked that too. Like, do you have a dick?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure they get asked that. It's like people stop it. But it was really interesting to see these interviews and then pivoting back to what I think Jen, one of the actresses who was interviewed for this, and he was one of our guides, frankly, and I am mm-hmm. so glad we had all of these amazing trans actors and creatives to serve as guides in this film, was talking about how, okay, so we have here very bad rep and very awful questions being asked of trans women in talk shows, but that was the only rep. So mm-hmm. I saw myself on the stage being interviewed by, like, you know, Arsenio Hall, Maury Povich, Gary Collins, and I could relate to that woman on the stage, even though she right. was in a position where she was having to answer or deflect really demeaning questions.
Yeah, right. And we've talked about this before on here, you know, that which is worse, bad representation or no representation?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's not the right question to ask. Because, yeah, without any representation, you feel like you're all alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You feel like you're the only one like this. And so bad representation in some ways is better than no representation for that individual. However, it's what it reflects back out onto society, which is where it becomes really problematic. If it mm-hmm. was just, you know, if it was just giving young trans or young queer people a glimpse to be able to see that, you know what, yes, this is possible. And yes, there are other people out there who are like me. That would be one thing,
mm-hmm.
but it's not. It's what it does when it tells people that, yeah, it's all right to ask this trans woman what is between her legs, or to diminish someone to just the contents of to their junk, right?
Just like you are your junk,
which is what it does.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking here of the interview that Leslie Feinberg, when she was on the gym, I think Leslie Zizia, pronouns towards the end of their life. I'll just use they, them. When Leslie was on the Joan Rivers show, I don't know what year that was. I don't remember. But Leslie was there with another trans person, another trans guy, and I think a trans woman. And Leslie was talking exactly what you were saying, that trans people are defined by what other people see rather than how they themselves define themselves. And in media, if you as a trans person are not able to define yourself, then you are being defined by others. And so you end up with these fucked up tropes.
Yes.
Which have real world consequences for individual trans people.
They do. I think, was it Laverne Cox who said that, you know, it's you see these depictions on screen and what is happening there, you don't have access to that person on the screen who is making you feel that way. Mm-hmm. But you do have access to your local trans person. And there are people who will then go out and enact their frustration and their anger at what they've seen depicted on the nearest possible target.
Mm-hmm. I think Lily Wachowski may have said something to that effect too. For those not in the know, Lily Wachowski was one of the producers of The Matrix, directors of The Matrix, and she and her sister are both trans. They both came out and are on this stage of their journey together, which I find, I mean, I'm so glad they have each other's support. So, but Lily was talking about that too, about, you know, people acting out on what they see on the screen and taking it beyond the screen. So we can talk about the bury your gays tropes. Well, what about the bury your trans tropes? And let's talk about the fact that one of the most victimized groups in this country and probably worldwide are trans women of color.
Right. I mean, there are so many intersections of hatred that trans women of color have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's racism, there's misogyny, there's transphobia, there's homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is all wrapped up in one neat little package for your friendly neighborhood bigot to work out their frustrations on.
Yeah. And I think a couple of the other trans actresses who were on there, I think Trace, I can never remember her last name, but Trace, I think that's just like the coolest name. She was in Transparent. Anyway, she was talking about that too. And so was Trace Lizette. And so I think Alexandra Gray also mentioned it, but it's like everybody who was in this documentary was talking about what that means and talking about some of the other aspects and talking about films that they saw or were part of their world growing up prior to coming out and prior to starting their journey into their true selves, that some of the films that they look back on now and they're just, it's like, it's horrible, but they could relate for a little bit to that trans character on the screen. I mean, they had a really interesting discussion about Boys Don't Cry, starring Hilary Swank. And I want to say, when did that come out, Lise? Was that like 92, 93, somewhere in there?
Mid-90s, I think it was.
Yeah, Hilary Swank.
No, it was after that.
Okay.
I saw it after art school, so it was early 2000s. 1999.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Hilary Swank won an Oscar, I believe, for her portrayal of Brandon Tina, a trans man in Nebraska, who was horrifically murdered because he was trans. He was brutally murdered and raped prior to his death. And that movie, I've seen the movie, I've seen some of the documentaries, and let's just talk a little bit about cisgender actors portraying trans actors, because trans people, this came up. Jen Richards brought it up. And it came up in this sense, and it also came up in terms of the Matthew McConaughey film, Dallas Buyers Club, with Jared Leto mm-hmm. portraying the trans woman who was the drug addict and who served as a vehicle for Matthew McConaughey's character to be redeemed.
Yes. Yeah. One of the things they pointed out was you have these actors who are playing these trans people. Mm-hmm. And when they are shown as actors, they are hyper-masculine and hyper-feminine. So it's like they are sort of repudiating this persona that they took on for this movie, which I find to be particularly galling,
mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, in the case of people who won Oscars for their portrayals and then seem to go as far out of their way to be like, yes, but this isn't really who I am.
Yeah, don't come and kill me because I'm not actually this creepy trans person. I am actually a masculine cisgender man. Like when, mm-hmm. you know, the comment about Jared Leto accepting his Oscar for the role in that film, and he was, you know, bearded, you know, looking like, you know,
tuxedo,
like a rock yeah. star guy, blah, blah, blah. And yet he had portrayed a trans woman in Dallas Buyers Club. And I think it was Jen Richards who made the comment about how cisgender men appropriating a trans woman's character and then performing that, but then, you know, making sure everybody knew they were cisgender, that's another form of kind of violence enacted on trans people in mm-hmm. a way. And I had,
it's another form of erasure.
And I hadn't even thought about that, but I do wonder, like, yay me, I guess. I mean, I'm trying to educate myself, but in the last like 5 years, especially, I've always wondered, why do they always get cisgender guys to play trans women characters? Like,
right. I mean, it almost feels like they're flexing or somehow. Look at how good an actor I am, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they may be excellent actors and may be able to do a technically proficient job at playing a transgender person, but, you know, but they don't have the lived experience.
Exactly.
It's like when I get ticked off that you've got some straight actress playing a lesbian again.
Mm-hmm. I know, again. I'm sure trans again. People are saying, again.
Exactly.
I was thinking about that movie, and I can't remember the name of it. I suck at this. That they were talking about where they got another, that his last name is Sarandon, but I don't think he's related to Susan. And he was portraying a, like, some crazy, horrible trans woman. And there was a trans woman actress that was tapped for the role, but she didn't get it because, quote, she looked too feminine, unquote.
Yes. Yeah, Chris Sarandon. It was
Chris Sarandon. His,
wasn't that his, like, movie debut?
Yeah.
Or one of them?
Yeah. She looked too feminine, friends. I want that to sink in for a while. So the purpose of that movie was to make sure that the trans woman character did not look too feminine, even though the trans woman that they were talking about, it was based on a lived experience, actually did look pretty feminine.
Dog Day Afternoon.
Dog, yeah.
Is the movie.
They were trying to dehumanize trans women and to defeminize into, like, once again, the dude in the dress.
Yes.
The dangerous mm-hmm. dude in the dress.
Yep.
Ugh.
Because, you know, in our society, if you can't relate to someone, if you can't explain them, they must be dangerous.
They must totally be dangerous. Oh my God.
Well, and you know, yeah, okay, as a starting point, okay, but then, you know, so they were talking about The Crying Game, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's that scene in The Crying Game, which I have only seen clips of. So
you haven't seen the movie.
No, I haven't. The cis dude finds out that this woman that he is interested in is transgender, and what does he do? He like runs off and spends like 3 days throwing up.
Yeah.
And the point they made was that this kernel, this depiction, then becomes this trope that you see for decades after, where when a trans woman is exposed as being trans, all of these men just can't control their disgust and have to throw up. Ace Ventura Pet Detective, which was one of my favorite movies when I was in high school, does this, like, is sort of the revolting pinnacle of this, where there's a scene where just dozens of people dozens of straight men are barfing because the bad guy has been exposed as being a trans woman.
And one of the commenters in the documentary, Zeke Smith, was commenting on that, how that was one of his favorite movies growing up. And he said, and watching it now, like the disgust that was thrown at the trans woman, I mean, he like got really, he could not really talk about it. That,
yeah.
And the same with some of the other people who were talking about the, you know, that particular trope where you get the straight cis dudes vomiting in disgust about having been intimate with or even thought about intimacy with someone who turned out to be trans, a trans woman.
Right. And I mean, it makes that okay. Because mm-hmm. when your only depictions are, this is what people feel when they experience spending time with this group of people, then it normalizes it, that particular reaction.
Yeah, that it's okay to be disgusted by trans people.
Mm-hmm. Or that it's mandatory to be disgusted by trans people.
That's, yeah. That's
because don't forget, our society has an extremely high level of toxic masculinity and homophobia involved in it. And, you know, I mean, one of the reasons why trans women are in such danger is because of their romantic partners and their concern mm-hmm. about what other people will think of them when they find out that they are with a trans person. You know?
I'm going back to Jen Richards, because she had a lot of really interesting and spot on things to say. And she made a comment about how we were watching a clip from a film where a trans woman is revealed to be trans, and this cisgender straight man is horrified and disgusted. And Jen points out, she said that trans people have to bear the burdens of secrets, like, mm-hmm. like, and then they have to be responsible for how other people feel about those secrets. That they are never valid to have their own feelings about being trans, or, you know, what happens if someone finds out they're trans, and they're responsible for that person's reaction. That, yes. that they're carrying a lot of weight and water for people who are like, mm-hmm. I'm freaked out that you're trans. And so the trans person becomes the one who has to somehow make that better for the person freaking right. out about it.
They have to de-escalate. I think Jen also, you know, made the point that, you know, disclosure is dangerous, potentially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as queer people, we have felt that, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. outing yourself is always a fraught proposition, even if it's to someone that you are fairly certain mm-hmm. is going to take it well. The only people that I don't worry about coming out to are people who look like me.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So, but even there, I don't have to deal. I mean, it's curiosity, discomfort, but that visceral disgust is not something that I typically have directed at me mm-hmm. when I come out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's dangerous, but it's not walking that knife edge anywhere near what trans people have to negotiate on a daily basis.
I was thinking here about Sandra Caldwell, who is, mm-hmm. you know, a well-known award-winning actress, and she is trans and did not reveal that fact for decades because of how dangerous it was. And there's a moment in the film when she's talking about it, and when she did finally come out, and you can just kind of feel the sense of like relief when she's giving her speech at, I think it was at the GLAAD Awards. And she's just like,
I think so, yeah.
Like you can just see how this just like kind of helped her. But she also talks about why she didn't, because of the danger inherent in coming out as trans, not just in the industry, in the film industry, but in general. because she's a trans woman of color, and
yes,
that would have been devastating. And she had all, she went through shit regardless as a woman of color, but as a trans woman of color, there's a whole nother layer of shit that she would have to go through. And I thought that was a really moving part when she talked about coming out later as a trans woman. And she had been in a lot of different projects and a lot of different films. And I just was like, wow. Just wow.
I was very interested in the discussion that was had about why trans women are so much more visible than trans men in media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the term that Laverne Cox used was commodifiable, that trans women, women in general, are more commodifiable, which is why we see and hear more about them, and that trans men are not as visible
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. And I'm still processing through my feelings on all of that. But that is nothing to, you know, compared to the lack of representation that we have for non-binary people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, trans women get more representation than trans men, who get more representation than non-binary folks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's this, like, fucked up sort of hierarchy or caste system that we keep reenacting in all of our different, you know, every different group has this, like, layered caste system. And it's really interesting to me how that just, like, plays out time and time and time again.
That is really interesting. And I'm thinking here, there were several trans men who were brought on to talk about, who participated in this project and talked about representation. And all the people who were involved in this project, there's this tension there. And as a queer person myself, I can kind of relate to this. A tension mm-hmm. between the horrible rep that trans people have gotten in media, but yet that it's rep. And so they saw themselves
yeah.
on screen in some fashion and was like, I'm not the only one. And you know, you could see Laverne Cox kind of wrestling with this, like, and when she was talking about Paris is Burning and the kind of representation yes. that brought, and that, you know, she personally loves it, but there's problematic elements in that film, mm-hmm. just as there are in a lot of films that have LGBTQ characters. And I really felt that. I resonated with that because representation for me as a lesbian has been shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're always killing lesbians off, you know, or giving them terrible fates, you know, or sticking them in asylums or whatever the hell. And so I related.
Or turning them straight at the last
minute. Right. And I related to that because growing up, it was like I didn't have anybody, I didn't know anybody besides me who had these weird feelings, right? And so I would see myself in shitty rep and be like, oh my God, I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
So I,
yeah,
you know, I totally get that. I totally empathize with this weird tension. Like, trans people have been in media forever. It's been mostly bad, but it's changing. And I liked that they brought in, like, newer projects, Pose, for example, Transparent, mm-hmm. that made efforts to bring trans actors and actresses and into those projects, but also on the crew and in the writing rooms, and to really give visibility, correct visibility, honest visibility with integrity to trans yeah. characters and trans people.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most interesting stories was sort of the change of heart that, oh, and I can't remember his name, the showrunner for Nip Tuck, who then also did Pose.
He did Pose. Ryan, yeah. Let's see, Nip Tuck showrunner. I'm looking this up because I just think of him as Ryan, that guy Ryan. That dude, that was really interesting to me because Ryan Murphy, because I didn't realize that he was the creator of Pose too, after Nip right. Tuck, which had some really problematic elements.
Oh my God. Yeah. The trans rep in Nip Tuck was God. Just awful.
It was awful.
Every hackneyed stereotype and trope that you could think of that related to trans people. I mean, they just threw it all against the wall just to see what would stick.
Hey, this looks good. Dun, 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 you know? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was, yeah. Anyway, the fact that he did Pose and I had this conversation with you. I have a really hard time with Pose. Because that's the era that I came of age in, and it's really painful for me to see that era. It's the it's 1989-ish, and it's the AIDS era, and that was my coming of age period. And so it's hard for me to watch all of these queer people, you know, trying to mm-hmm. protect themselves from AIDS, and it's just really, really gritty. So I have to watch it in small bursts. I can't binge it. I just can't. So I have to. So, but it's, I mean, the characters are amazing. The stories are amazing. And it's heartwarming, but it's also devastating. And I just thought, this is the same guy who did Nip Tuck. What the hell happened mm-hmm. to him? Like,
well, right. And if he can come around like that, that gives me a lot of hope that there are a lot of other people who just need, they just need to see some of this better representation. They need to get away from the tropes and the bullshit and see stuff by trans people for trans people and get a real feeling of what trans people are like, because trans people are people. They are not the sum of whatever genitalia they have.
Exactly. Exactly. And they're not a monolith. I mean, come on. Let's be real right. here. So, to sum up, this disclosure was really, really, it's important. It is so very mm-hmm. important, especially for cisgender people in general. I mean, you know, I identify as queer, and I have a lot of queer folks in my spheres, but I learned a lot in by watching this movie. I literally was so ignorant of how long trans people have been in media that mm-hmm. I'm just like, I'm appalled that, you know, media that I consumed as, you know, a young person, as a teen, had trans people in it, but it was such bad representation, and I didn't even register really in my head, except like, yeah. Oh, that poor trans person. And so this has really opened my eyes, and I'm now going to educate myself further on this kind of thing, on trans representation in media. And I'm going to like fight hard to get more of it. I don't have any.
We need it.
We need it. It's absolutely needed. The more representation we have, friends, the better, and the more good representation we have. And I'm not saying that good representation means, you know, all the queer people are awesome and nothing bad ever happens. I'm saying like good representation that shows queer people as people mm-hmm. rather than tropes and stereotypes.
Well, and I think it was Jen Richards who said, you know, the problem isn't that one trans person is being shown in a negative light mm-hmm. or dying. Mm-hmm. It's that this keeps happening. And when you have so little representation, what little you have just has this sort of disproportionate weight to it in sort of the media zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. And any one, you know, I mean, what we really need is we need enough representation that we can fit that full gamut of human experiences in there, so that one shitty representation is not the only thing people think of when someone comes out to them as being trans.
I think Brian Michael Smith may have said that too, and Teek Milan, trans men of color mm-hmm. who are also working in the industry. But I think the message was like, that was like from all the trans people there was like, you know, one, it's not that one, you know, it's when the entire realm of trans people are portrayed with these tropes right. and stereotypes, that's the problem. That is one of the primary yes. drivers of these issues, because they have, like I said earlier, these bad representations, these tropes and these stereotypes, they have real world consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And people can get hurt and killed because of them. That's why media is so important. And it's important to get the rep right.
Yep.
Especially in a media-driven culture and society like we are. So. Lise, final thoughts.
I'm really glad I watched this. I need to watch it again.
Same.
I think once isn't enough.
No, it's
there
not.
There's a lot there.
I'm definitely going to watch it another couple times. Definitely.
This is going to stick with me, which is good. It should.
It should. And I am definitely going to watch it again because there's a lot. When you watch it the first time, there's a lot you miss. And I went back and watched the second half again. And I still feel like I need to watch this a few more times and really absorb more because I feel now like I have more of a grounding in understanding more and being open to more. Wow. Everybody, the film is Disclosure. And please, please do yourselves a favor and watch it. The website is disclosurethemovie.com. That's one word, disclosurethemovie.com. Of course, I will put that link on our overview, but there it is. Please watch this film. It's like 1 hour and 47 minutes of time that is well spent. And it's important. It's important that we know the history and that we help make better paths to the future. Lise, segueing now, do you have a shout out this week?
I do have a shout out this week.
Woohoo!
My shout out is the book Planet Fall by Emma Newman.
Oh, yes. I remember when you said you were going to read that.
Mm-hmm. I finished it. It was really good and really interesting. The basic premise is, and it's difficult to talk about without getting spoilery.
Okay, don't get spoilery.
The basic premise is this group of people, of humans, left Earth to go to this planet to find God. And they were being guided by a woman who had been called to make this journey. And they got there and they created a town outside sort of the city of God. And this woman who was called there has been inside the city, and every year they get a message from her. And this year it's getting close to the message coming. There's just this one wrinkle, which is that her grandson shows up. And her grandson was born on this planet. And she has been inside the city communing with God ever since they landed.
Okay, that's what? That's super, like, what?
Wow. It is.
Wow.
And so it's all told from the point of view of Ren, who is like a 3D printing engineer.
Oh, no, it's cool. Amazing. Right on.
Yeah. So much of their technology just revolves around 3D printing. So they have these 3D printers and they can scavenge raw materials from the landscape or recycle them from things that have broken down. And she, you know, designs them and does upkeep on these printers. And this whole society is built around like 3D printing.
Oh,
and
cool.
God, basically.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's really, really interesting. And I highly recommend it to everybody. So, yeah, Planet Fall, Emma Newman, check it out.
That sounds amazing. I think I'm going to have to do it. I have a shout out. I have started reading the graphic novel Archival Quality by Ivy Noel Weir and Steens, who is the illustrator. And I'm going to read you the synopsis here. So Walden loses her job at the library and she starts working at the Logan Museum as an archivist. But the job may not be the second chance she was hoping for. She finds herself confronting mental health, her relationships, and before long her grasp on reality as she begins to dream of a young woman she's never met but feels strangely drawn to, and the young woman is asking Sel for help. So... Sel attempts to learn more about her and begins losing his sense of time, misplacing things, passing out. The job is becoming dangerous, but she can't let go. Who is she? Why is this woman so fixated on Sel? and to still have the power to save her when she's still trying to save herself. So it deals with a lot of interesting interpersonal relationships and issues, but also this like possible external stuff going on. So it's Archival Quality. That's the name of the graphic novel. Came out in 2018. Ivy Noel Weir and the Steens, Steenz, is the illustrator. And so I'm about a third of the way through and I'm really enjoying it. I think, Lise, that you will enjoy it too. So,
hey, a librarian and an archivist? I mean, that's right up my alley.
Shout out! I think you'll enjoy the art too. So, just saying. So, give it a look. Give it a holla. All right.
Alrighty.
That's it. You got anything else, Lise, you want to like leave our listeners with for today? It's deep.
It is deep. I guess what I want to leave our listeners with is don't be afraid to challenge yourselves. Don't be afraid to admit that you were wrong about what you were, the way you felt about a group based on
media,
the information that you were fed about them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the only one who can overcome that is you. So.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to admit your ignorance, friends. It's, you know, that's the first path to, it's the first step to getting rid of that ignorance is saying, you know what, I was ignorant about this and I'm now going to learn more and do better.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, do better.
Do better. Do better, friends. Be better, do better. And also stay safe out there. Oh my gracious me. Anywho, we are Let's Geek Out. I am Andy Marquette, joined by my colleague and friend Lise MacTague. You can find us at our website, lesgeekoutcast.com, or on Twitter, LGO Podcast. Dun, dun, dun. You can also find either me or Lise on running around on Twitter and various social media, and it's really hard to find us, Andy Marquette, Lise MacTague. On all the platforms, you will be able to find us. So thanks for hanging out with us, and please stay safe out there, and we will catch you next time. Take care, friends. Bye.
Oh my gracious me. You sounded very Midwestern there for
I
a second.
I know, right? My dad's grandmother used to say, oh my land. Just sort of like, oh my stars.
Uh-huh.
I think we should bring those back. Oh my stars. See what people think.
Oh, my favorite is Sweet Mother of Abraham Lincoln.
Where did that? Wow. I have not. What?
I think I got that from a cartoon somewhere.
Bless your heart, Lise. That's all that. That's